Welcome to episode 3 of the Pod Rock Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Case, and my co-host,
Ben State.
And we are excited to be here once again, and we're going to be covering a new set of topics. And Ben, you actually had a nice little list going on, and we're going to get to that in a minute. I just want to give a shout out to recent follows of our Twitter page. We really appreciate that, and it's great because we're starting to see people take notice of this podcast, and it's a great thing. So I think we're off to a good start, and we're going to keep doing this regularly, so you've got something to look forward to. Content is always king, you know, when you're doing this kind of business. So we'd like to just give a shout out to the McSauce Podcast, and also we hope this finds you well. And I had some recent dialogue with Chuck Lynch, so that was good to have some interaction regarding the show's content. That's great. Tells us people are listening, and I love that feedback. I love the participation and the interaction, so keep it up. And while we're at it, if you want to send some suggestions for topics, things maybe you want us to pick our brains with, go ahead and do that. We'd love to hear from you guys. And Ben, let's get started with that list you got, because you got some good stuff. We're going to riff on that tonight.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to bring up one of the followers that we have, Derek Day. I kind of dived into his world and his headspace a bit with some of the music that he puts out and kind of what he's been doing. I think you had a chance to listen to it as well. What I found interesting is there's videos of him playing on the Santa Monica in 2015, like on the street, just jamming and just just tearing it up. He was doing some covers. He did Civil War from GNR and just he nailed it. I was quite impressed for, you know, someone just going out there on the street and given that kind of musical performance. And then, you know, reading more and seeing some interviews, you know, finding out that he's played with Steve Vai. He's worked with Vernon Reid.
Right.
For those that don't know who Vernon Reid is, go check out Living Color. There was a song that was huge that I've even covered in a
Cult of Personality.
Band. Exactly. Yeah. What a great tune. I can't not turn that up every time I hear it on the radio. It's such a great song. He's got some good energy. Some of his interviews, Derek is definitely, you know, you can tell he's very passionate about what he's doing. You can tell he's enjoying the moment and the moments that he's having with some of these people in his career, which is great. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing kind of what he does musically going forward. It is a little different, at least that I found. Justin, you might have a different opinion, but the music isn't necessarily just straight rock. I found it, his vocals definitely had a lot of layers to it. The music itself had a lot of layers to it. One of the songs that stood out for me was called Click On Me. And one of the phrases in the lyrics.
The lyrics were very telling. I thought the lyrical content was on point.
Yeah, it was great. One of the quotes I was going to say from that song, how did no place become the place to be?
Exactly.
It resonated with me. And, you know, if anybody has an opportunity to go out and check out some of his stuff, I recommend it. It's up and coming. It's new. It's fresh. And it's an interesting listen. Lyrically and musically, and he's a very talented guitar player. So do you have anything to add to that? Justin, I kind of rambled there for a bit. But
I agree with everything you said. I saw the NAMM Jam on a Bus video he did. He did a couple of songs on there. And it was, I kind of zone in. When I see new performers and new talent and things of that nature, I knew from some of the stuff I saw online that, you know, guitar is in a lot of ways the center point of what he's doing. But the thing is that it's hard to describe. I guess I could see some Steve Vai influence in there. Steve's doing a vocal or something, like a vocal track, a song with a vocal. But then there's parts of intense, crazy, whammy stuff going on. But this guy's so rapid fire with that. It ups the intensity, and he's a very intense guy. He comes across, like you said, as someone who enjoys what he's doing. That definitely shows in the music, and it's a nice thing to see. I hope that going forward he keeps it up, and I would encourage him, if he ever hears this, to keep it up. Go with your gut. Go with what you like to do, because you got something unique there. He writes his own music. Guitar tone is really, really good. And I think it's the whole package of what he's doing, I really like a lot. And it's out there, but that's what we need. We don't need any more cookie cutter people. And I always like people that go out there and do something different. And this guy's definitely doing that. So I applaud him.
Yeah, he's definitely got his own uniqueness to him, which is what I found refreshing. Like you said, it's not your typical, you know, music that you would go out and listen to. It's definitely something that caught me by surprise. But yeah, I absolutely recommend it. If he does hear us talking about it, thank you. I love what you're doing, and keep it up.
Yeah, thanks for the Twitter follow.
Yeah,
he's our
thank
first
you.
Follower. The first follower of our show, Mr. Derek Day. Thank you very much. And your band members, fantastic. You've got a great trio going on there with your solo band. Excellent work.
Speaking of Steve Vai, I didn't know if you heard that he messed his finger up. Did you hear about that?
I heard about the cast. It was a thumb cast, but
he actually had trigger finger surgery. What I had heard was that he was holding a cord and for way too long, and it was a really obscure shaped cord, and he held for long enough that it jacked his finger up a little bit, so he was going to be out of commission for a bit. And I thought that you'd probably find that interesting, because I know you're a Steve Vai fan, and you've met him before. So
I've met him twice.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures. I wanted to bring that up. I'm going to be kind of going over some of the stuff I've kind of found out. There's going to be some album information here too. Godsmack's working on writing right now. They're doing kind of an acoustic thing. But they're also writing just whatever. And then if there's like two albums that come out of it, but they're not going to have anything out until 2022. I just saw recently David Gilmour confirmed that Pink Floyd, a reunion, will never happen. Right. He was quoted saying it would be fakery to go back and do it again. That he's a big influence on me too. That guy makes notes, just even a single note, sound like the universe just hit. I mean, he's great.
Takes account.
Yeah, absolutely. Albums that are coming up from this year for 2021. Candlebox has got one coming up called Wolves. They got a couple singles out there. I recommend people go and check it out. Foo Fighters. If you're a Foo Fighter fan, they've got another one. I think actually it dropped already. Alice Cooper has another one that just came out. Detroit Stories. Shocking enough, Evanescence has got one coming out in March. The Bitter Pill. And I'm going to thank Chuck, the other one of our other followers, for this one. He let us know that Weezer was recording in a studio and there was going to be orchestration on the album. So thank you, Chuck. I want to know that I
thank
found
Chuck.
Out. Yeah, I think it's coming out May 7th. Another huge one. Justin, I know you and I are fans of Dream Theater, but Liquid Tension Experiment. Their next album was supposed to be out, and it got pushed and delayed due to some complications. So it should be out April 26th.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Wow. Other bands note, Dream Theater is working on new stuff, which is always great. Metallica is working on stuff, and I think Disturbed is, but I don't have any dates or any more information as far as when they'd be releasing some things. So. Anyway, you know, if you're looking for new music, or you're looking for stuff that you normally get into, there's going to be some good records being dropped here this year. So hopefully they'll open back up and we can start seeing concerts again. I know I'm missing it. I love live music. You get a real good sense of the vibe that they're really trying to get across. You can only get so much on an album, is where you can actually get not only the music, but you get the visuals from the bands as well when they're kind of thinking about the music that they're writing.
Yeah, I got a couple slices of music news myself. I saw Wolfgang Van Halen was interacting with some fans on Twitter, which I thought was really neat. That guy has been through the ringer. There's some real dinks out there that have been giving that guy a hard time through this whole thing, and it really ticks me off. From me to him, stay strong, man. Just keep going. Just keep going strong. The other thing was Derek Sherinian is writing a new album for release in 2022, I believe. Which is great because his last album just came out in like August, or it came out in like September of last year.
So he's cranking him up.
Yeah, Simon Phillips is going to be playing drums again. What's that? He's writing it with him.
I was going to say, I thought he just released one recently, right?
Yeah, he's cranking them out. I mean, it's been kind of neat to see some of these bands do things, more things, like put videos out that are more interactive with the fans in a way. Billy Sheehan is great. Billy Sheehan has been putting videos out, and he did one on changing pickups in one of his bass guitars. He did another one for setting up a bass, leveling frets, doing some polish on the frets. He put a parts bass together with just parts he had laying around, and got a neck from a guy in California, just a cheap neck, and he put together just a Franken bass, and it was really great because he's just like, I'm not a luthier, but this is just some of the things that I do, and throwing that disclaimer out there. But yeah, I was gonna show you how I do it. It was a great video, and so he's been doing that, and then Yngwie Malmsteen has been putting some videos out. He did a master class here a couple weeks ago, and also a few months prior to that, he was showing how to install his Seymour Duncan pickups in his Strat, right? So, which I thought was neat. So it's really neat to see these musicians go and do some different things that you normally wouldn't see from these guys, because before it was rinse, repeat, record, tour, announce a release date for a new album, rinse, repeat, right? Now these guys are having to do other things to keep in the public eye, if you will. But I also
think it helps them out. I think they're getting as much as you can try to make the best of COVID. I know there's some bands out there that are like, yeah, we've got material, but we're not going to release it until we can tour, right?
And then which AC/DC released their stuff, they're like, we're not going to hold off anymore,
right?
And so there's some artists who are like, you know what? We're just going to put stuff out. You have to stay. It might not be the most lucrative because you don't have the merch, like in the tour sales, ticket sales, but you have to do something because you've got to keep that in the public eye.
Some of them are doing that, the online concerts, right? Or the videos, like you're saying, either lessons or, some of them are doing the $5 or $10. I think I might have brought this up before with some of the other bands. I know that Lizzie Hale has done quite a bit and has been doing quite a bit from Hailstorm. She's lead singer, for those that don't know. She's been doing a lot of videos and a lot of collaborations with other people. And it's kind of cool to see them, sitting in their own homes and playing their instruments and, getting out there to see – putting that stuff out there for fans to see it and responding back on – social media is where, if they're normally in the studio, that's kind of what you get. Yeah, they're in the studio and then they're on tour, right? And then you got to go and you got to pay for the meet and greets if you want to have a chance to interact with them. So I think it's definitely changed a bit, and I hope that some of that still stays. I still love live music. That won't ever change for me. The ability for people to, gather and hear it and feel it. It's just amazing when you get that kick drum that just moves your chest, and your whole body vibrates with the sounds that the people put out. It's so much fun.
And even if they're songs that you've heard a million times, every time you hear them live, it never gets old. And the energy from the crowd is another aspect of not just the instrumentation on the stage, but the energy from the crowd is like the other half of the sandwich.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I enjoy, obviously, because I write and I record and I jam out on songs that I still like to play, just to warm up to. But seeing it live and feeling that energy and feeling everybody else is that commonality, I think, that we kind of mentioned before with music. It brings people together, right? And when you get that big energy and that vibe, I've been watching Seven Dust, a lot of their live performances lately online, and I've been lucky enough to see them twice. The first time I didn't even know I was gonna be seeing them. That was up in Spokane with Creed. I thought it was just gonna be one opening band, which was Nickelback. They opened, and I thought it was gonna be Creed next. And next thing I know, you know, here comes this band with these guitar players that are jumping off their PA systems, and
the entire
floor is just rumbling. And here comes this big guy, you know, lead singer with these dreads, just looking almost like the term, you know, the Predator, right? I mean, he's had this dreadlock thing going, and I'm like, no way. And they started out with Denial, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm lucky I got to see a band I didn't even know that was going to be, you know, here. And then the second time was actually here in town. They came in here with Disturbed, and they opened up for them. But yeah, they're amazing. I would go check them out too if you haven't heard of them.
I think Seven Dust's first album is the only one I like a lot. I haven't heard it in 20 years, but my brother has all that stuff, and I listened to it, and I really like the first album a lot. The second one, not so much, but the first one had this just no holds barred, take no prisoners attitude to it, and it was I just like the heavy riffs, you know, the heavy riffs, and the vocals were great. So
I would agree with you. I think on the second album, not that they didn't have heavy riffs, but it was different approach for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But some of the other albums they have, they definitely have kind of gone back to, I guess if you want to call salt and peppering it into their albums, they definitely have a core style that they bring. It's that driving energy, right, that I liked about the first album, and they definitely have songs out there like that.
Yeah, it's great. So what else you got?
That was it for news. I was going to bring up Strings. I know that I personally played around with quite a few different ones. I have my personal favorite, which I can't find anymore.
Were those, the Dean Markleys?
Yeah, I like the Dean Markley nickel wounds. I got kind of attached to them. Before that, I started using the Blue Steels from Dean Markley. What I found with those is they were great for probably, I'd say, a couple hours of play. And then you had to retune them more frequently, and they just became a little bit more dull. So I kind of gravitated away from the Blue Steels and went with just the normal nickel wound. In the, you know, the 1046 gauge is what I use. I know there's a lot of different ones out there. So I've kind of worked with those. Now I'm using Slinkies from Ernie Ball. I've also played around with the GHS Boomers. I like the Slinky ones a bit better, personally. And the way that I pick, I can't use light strings. I'll end up eventually bending that high E string, and I'll break it eventually because I like to bend. But those are kind of my personal favorites. Which ones do you use, and have you found that you liked?
Ernie Balls are my thing. Super extra Slinkies. In fact, I got some. Let me see what I got. I went through several Super Slinkies. But I go ahead and I get it. I have a hybrid set made at the guitar shop, and I go with a heavier six string. But see, I use extended range instruments as well, but on a standard six string, I think I beef up the G and I beef up the E.
So you kind of, you're saying you mix them up. So do you take two packs and kind of open both packs and grab the ones you want out of it and then kind of discard the other ones?
No, I've got a guitar shop that will put together my custom set, but they're Ernie Balls.
What place is that? I don't know if anybody else might be interested in if it's.
Most guitar shops will do it if they're worth their salt, as far, because every guitar shop should have the ability. You see the wooden trays with all the different sleeves? They do that so that players can have custom sets. That's a nice thing that a lot of the decent shops will do. This happens to be one of them. Music Unlimited over in Richland. That guy's great. The owner's awesome. And I exclusively do business with him in this area. So it's great. It can, because you go in there and the guy knows his stuff, right? We got another guitar shop around here, but they're just not there. They're just not for me, because a lot of the employees are, it's just a job, or they're high school kids or whatever, and they haven't been around long enough to know what I want, right? Yeah. And they'll just get, it's whatever is off the shelf. They don't do, I've never asked them to do custom string sets with me. So, you know, it might not be fair for me to say that they don't. They might, but most guitar shops will do that for you. So, what I do is I say this, I give them a list, and they know by now what I like. So, I just go and say, I want this. And so, a lot of times for me, I do it for, I want to have, I like having a little bit more beef feel-wise to the lower strings. And I like to have a lighter top, right? So my G will not be wound. So I like having, I used to play 10s probably, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I used to play GHS Boomers. And those are pretty good. I really like the Gibson strings. We used to have another guitar shop. At one point, we had four guitar shops in over here locally. Two of them have closed down. But I really like the Gibson strings. They've got the vintage wound Gibson strings. I'm not sure if they make those anymore. I'd have to check. But I love those things. I don't know, man. Maybe it's just a psychological thing, but I love those on Gibsons. Like, I've got a Flying V. I've got a Gibson 57 reissue Flying V, which I just love. Gibson made that for me for build to order, so it's made just for me. And it took me about 6 months to get it, but that's a long time ago. Gibson's totally different animal now, and they probably got different operations. But at the time, you know, that was 2003, and, you know, so I guess so I'm not too long-winded. Right now I'm using the Ernie Balls. I love Ernie Ball stuff. I got two Ernie Ball guitars. Those are DiMarzio, because I love DiMarzio too, but I use their cables, their instrument cables, and they're just awesome. In my opinion, they got the best strings out there. And because the variety that they've got, it's insane. You can put any combination you want that you put together is just going to feel awesome and sound awesome with those guys. They stay in tune. They don't break.
Well, I think they're actually selling packs now that they're prepackaged. And I want to say that one of them was.
They've got some hybrid sets. Yeah. But it's.
Yeah.
Not,
that's becoming kind of a thing. Right. And a lot of guitar players are finding that out. I mean,
it could be because they're spending more time with their instrument now.
It could be the feel too, right? I mean, for me,
it feels huge.
It's a huge thing, and you know, I'm sure that you could probably agree with this. Is when you play your instrument, you don't want to fight it, right?
No,
you want to enjoy it.
Well, some people like a fight. I like something that fights back a little bit.
Which we, you know, that'll be another topic for the yes. tension on the guitar, right? But the strings have a huge effect, and I'm like you, the feel of the strings, especially like I was saying, I can't do nines because I'll end up on a bending one time and breaking them no matter what, just because when I bend, I like that tension right against my finger, and having a 10 gives me a little bit more of that feel to it that makes it feel good, that I want to dig in on it and it won't break on me. So I totally get what you're saying. I know that the custom strings are kind of becoming definitely a thing out there, and it's cool that Ernie Ball is actually selling packs like that, kind of pre-canned. But it's also cool that you can buy them that way in stores, like you're saying. I did not realize that.
It for decades.
I've just been buying packs because I've been using, you know, the ones that I'm accustomed to and that I like, and that I found that I was enjoying it. Well, at least until I couldn't find them anymore. So now I crossed over to the Ernie Ball scene like you did.
yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
And I really like, I think we had picks on there too. So once we're done with this, we'll hit picks real quick. So that was my suggestion with the picks. You were asking me what else, but yeah, I love strings. And it's funny. I knew a guy that was like, hey, when I was a kid, we'd say, hey, these are good for three more boils. And they would actually boil the guitar strings instead of buying a new set.
To get rid of all the grime. Yeah, I've heard of that with bass strings, too.
Boil them on the stove. That. Yeah. Which weakens them, by the way, because it's metal fatigue because of the heat. But
I've actually seen somebody. I went over to his house to jam with him. This is way back when I was, you know, jamming with bands and learning and teaching myself. I showed up to this guy's house, to jam with the band, and I came in, and he's just like, his pot was over boiling, right, with all this hot water. I'm like, dude, are you making spaghetti or what? What's going on? He's like, oh no, man. He grabs these like these barbecue clippers that you would use on a barbecue to flip chicken, and he puts them into the boiling pot, and he's pulling out these bass strings. He's like, no, man, just give me like 10 more minutes. I gotta let these things cool before I restring my bass. I was like, wow. Oh,
what a cheapskate. That's funny. Hey, that's what we did in the old days. We didn't have money for that, you know. Well, it was a different scene. It was a different scene, though, because a lot of guys would, I mean, you just wouldn't. They weren't, I don't know, I mean, I wasn't around the 70s, wasn't born yet, but it would seem to me that strings were made, well, bass strings are a lot more expensive. They're like double the price of guitar strings, standard guitar strings, because they're thicker and it's the material that's there. But I think that maybe, strings were a lot more expensive back then, because the production costs, they didn't have the machines. Maybe they're a little bit, maybe they're easier to make these days. I'm not sure. But it seems to me that I remember I went into a guitar shop and they had like the D'Addario strings for like $3.99 a pack, which was like the cheapest you could ever get them locally that I'd ever seen in my life. I said, why are you guys' strings so affordable? I mean, you're the lowest price on anyone. And they said, well, because you can go online and order entire cases of these things for so cheap. So we lowered the price so that we could sell as many strings as they do. And then they must have had a change in management or something, because then after about 5 years of doing that, they went back up to full retail. I'm like, God, you guys suck. So I went and I started ordering my strings off the internet, because you shouldn't have to pay a lot of money for strings.
Yeah, I used to do the buy one, get one free.
When, yeah, they quit doing it.
Yeah, they did. They stopped. I remember that's usually kind of when I was playing around with different strings to find out, or different gauges, just to kind of find out what I was wanting.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Yeah.
It was, you know, it was a nice way, because you could buy one pack at one, you know, one gauge, and you're like, oh, hey, you know, why not I just grab this other one and see what it's like, and if I don't like it, I still have another one that I can just swap out, you know, if I don't like the one that I bought, but...
Right. I know. Well, no, I laughed, right? Because you reminded me of a guy in New York. I'm from New York, and there was this guy I knew who I took lessons from for a little while, and that was an interesting experience. But he was really trying to sell me on these Elixir strings, right? And Elixir strings I only used on an acoustic, and it's funny how he marketed it. He goes, yeah, these things are great for... These are gonna be great for you. Great for you. This is like circa 2007. He goes, it's like having a condom on a string. Jeez, Tim, what are you doing, man?
Oh my
gosh. You
didn't
even tell me that.
You can love your instrument, just don't love your instrument, right?
Yeah, right. You can sleep
with
it.
Oh my god.
Don't.
That's hilarious. That reminds me of a story. One of my friends, when I was in high school, you know, if you were lucky enough that either you had money or you worked, and you know, my first guitar I had to work for. But one of my other friends, you know, he was an interesting guy to begin with, but he went and bought an S&G. And I remember the first day he got it, we were hanging out, he was playing it, and he's like, all right, man, well, 7 o'clock, you know, I got school tomorrow. And I'm like, well, dude, we still got another hour if you want to jam. He's like, no, man, I got to go to bed. I got to go sleep with this thing. I'm like, what?
Oh, man.
He's like, yeah, dude, you know, you got to get to know your guitar. And I just bought this thing, and I'm just like, right, that's cool. Yep, 7 o'clock, we're good to go.
He's going to really get to know it in the biblical sense. Oh, my gosh, it's funny.
Yeah. So picks. Once again, this is one of those other things that can affect your tone, as you well know.
Oh, yeah.
Which ones do you like? What has been your experience with ones you haven't liked?
Oh, that's awesome. I've been sold on the Dunlop Jazz 3 picks. And I'll tell you why. It's the Dunlop Jazz 3 with the grip, because that pick point will not swing back and forth. It won't slip out of your fingers. And I've got man-sized Vienna sausage, chicken pot pie hands. And it's very important that I – and that's also why I put a death grip on the instrument. I've got gorilla hands, man. and does not lend itself well to playing Paul Gilbert licks or doing any Tony McAlpine 8-fret stretches or anything like that. Sorry, guys, can't do it. So I need to have some picks that are going to at least stay, you know, where it's going to be stable as far as slipping. I still like the Dunlop 3mm, the big stubbies. I love those things. I tried the 2mm. They break too easy. They'll have jagged pieces that come off. I really love the big stubbies, the Dunlop big stubbies, because it had a really good point on it, but it's got a glassy tone. So, and especially if you're using distortion or overdrive, I should say, and you're picking really fast, you can hear this glassy tone. I just love it. And I've been using those for over 20 years. And I also like the Dunlop Jazz 3 are really good. The black ones, those are ones I like. Oh, let's see. The Dunlop John Petrucci picks are really nice. I just feel like I feel like when I'm playing a small pick like that, it's like a sport. It feels like a sports car in the form of a playing experience. Like especially if you're a faster player. Like I like to play. I play some fast runs. I'm not like Mr. Two-Handed Tapping and Michelangelo Badio Shredmaster, but I just like when I do play fast, I like not having to worry about what the pick's doing in my fingers as far as slipping around and stuff. And with those, I don't have to do it. And you can still get all those harmonics, those pinch harmonics, the way you want. And it's even easier to do cool things like tapping the strings with the edge of the pick, like Joe Satriani style, really, really fast, or like Zach Wilde would do. It's good for that. I just like it. I like having a tight, concise point. And those picks get that to me. And I got turned on to those because of I think it was a Guitar One way back. It was either Guitar One or Guitar Player. They had kind of a consensus with, I think, Joe Bonamassa was on there. John Petrucci was on there. Those were two guys that they said, what Dunlop picks do you like, or jazz picks? And there's the red ones and there's the black ones. And I think Bonamassa likes the red ones. And then Petrucci said he liked those for a while, but then when they had the black ones, he went to those. And you got to remember that those two types of picks, actually the three I've mentioned, because of the thickness, but also the material, like there's the Delrin picks. And those all, like, I've noticed that if you play like a Dunlop 1.5 millimeter pick, it's the nylon. And those are pretty good. Like, I think the Malmsteen ones, it's great. You get really warm tone. His signature white picks are the same as the purple ones. They're the same size, same material, just a different color. So if you want to get that kind of warm tone, and see, the point's not very defined on those. It's very rounded off. So, and I know the Michelangelo Badio signature picks are also, those are chroma cast. And those are good picks. And they have a powder on them to keep, there's two different ways they companies keep, you know, they have the non-slip feature. One is through the powder, or it's actually this, the grip. The grip itself, like it feels like Braille, you know.
Yeah,
and they've got those on there. Yeah, and I like really floppy Dunlop for acoustic stuff, for doing a lot of strumming, and also single note stuff. I really like those floppy white picks that they've got. Those are kind of neat. I've tried the Planet Waves ones. Those are okay. The Gibson ones I really like a lot. Those are probably 2mm. They're black, and they just have a gold Gibson logo on them. I think it's still like Gibson. Yeah, it's just Gibson USA. If they still make them, I'm not sure. I never throw picks out. If I don't have any picks, it's because I lost them. And I have a little miniature locker, Superman. It's got a picture of Superman on it. And I got it from my wife for like an anniversary or something. It's just full of any kind of pick you can think of. I just bought three. I think it's U.S. Blues. U.S. Blues is a company. They're out of Massachusetts. I think they might be near Boston somewhere, but I've got an ebony pick. These are made out of wood, okay? And I found some online, and I bought a set. I bought, I think it was a pack of three, and they're really neat. And believe it or not, I mean, if you get three different types, you could do kind of a sound comparison, and they're really cool. And I really like these kind of picks for especially acoustic guitar. And I've just picked up a brand new nylon string thin body acoustic, which is really nice, and they sound great for that. So I got some metal picks. Those are okay, I guess. They're obviously metallic sounding. But for me, those Jazz 3s are currently what I'm using. So
have you tried the acrylic ones?
No, I wouldn't say no. I bought one of those variety packs of Ernie Ball picks, and there's one called a Prodigy, and this is a 2mm. It's super stiff, crazy looking point on it. And no, I have any acrylic ones. What ones are you talking about?
It's just the material that it's made out of. There's an acrylic one. They've been making those kind of since the 80s. They're kind of a tough and light, and they, you know, obviously they can come in different sizes and different, you know, from thin to medium to thick.
Right.
And they'll usually come, they look clear, right? So there's no color to them, which makes them look kind of cool. That, you know, instead of having a color, you don't have one at all. In fact, I think you mentioned Planet Waves. I bought this was just something that I wanted to do. I bought a pack of Planet Waves mediums that look like a 0.70mm, and they're glow in the dark. And I used them at one of the last shows that I had played with this band, and I thought they were cool because they glow in the dark. But being 0.70mm, they just didn't have quite the right thickness for me, and they weren't made out of that Tortex Dunlop that I like to use.
Oh yeah, those are so great.
I love Tortex. You're gonna laugh. I think the first type of picks I ever got were Fender mediums, right? They were the white ones, and there was hardly any grip to them. So when I was learning how to play, my hands didn't have calluses. My fingers weren't accustomed to holding the pick right, so my hands would sweat a bit, and I would always lose my pick, right. And it would fly out. So I used this product. I think it was supposed to be meant for bowling balls. It was called Gorilla Snot.
Oh, I remember that stuff. Yeah.
So I'd rub that between my index finger and my thumb just to try to hold on to these Fender picks, right? But then what happened with that is I would pick and I would strum so hard that it was almost like this, almost like a chunk of it eventually would be whittled down, and you'd look at my guitar, and underneath the strings you'd have the, you know, I guess you would call it pickings or pickins. It's shredded, right? And the picks wouldn't last. So then I got turned on to the Dunlop Tortexes, and I used the 88s. Awesome. Yeah, I love them. Not only do they have that light powdery coating when they first come out, like you're talking about, that I didn't have to use Gorilla Snot anymore, thank God. Because that was really embarrassing when, you know, you got your fingers all sticky half the time. But they're my go-to. And the style of music that I play, I'm going to agree with you 100% on the thinner picks for acoustic guitars, right? So you can really ring out the strings and the notes. So some of the stuff that I write has some clear tone, you know, no distortion to it. And I like to be able to strum or pick apart the notes without having a super thick pick to do that with. It's just a personal vibe from me that I like. So I stick with the 0.88s. And sometimes for recording, I'll go up to the 1mm. I think you had mentioned at one time when we were writing one of our first songs together to try that when you're doing solos. Or if you're doing some distortion work and not necessarily the clean channel to it. So I picked up the 1mm black Tortex picks too. Just, I don't know. I personally feel that the 88s kind of have a really strong attack on the strings, and because I'm not using super heavy gauge strings, they're not going to hit it so hard that I have to worry about tearing up the string or having it break. What I did want to mention, and I don't know if you've heard of these or not, Dava, I'm probably saying it wrong, so forgive me. They're grip covers that you can put over a pick. I don't know if you've heard of those or not.
A long time ago, I've seen those.
Yeah, so they slip over. I've never used any personally. I thought maybe you might have, or if anybody's listening and they have, you know, if you want to leave us a comment on Twitter.
So in other words, it's the foam toilet seat of all style of picks. Hey, nice and cushy.
Maybe.
But these ones won't pinch your butt, folks, so you got nothing to worry about.
Well, I noticed when your style of picking, you move a lot with your index fingers or your index finger and your thumb, right? The muscles between the tip of your finger and the next knuckle down between there. You use a lot more movement there. I tend to use a lot more wrist movement.
Well, you're doing it right. I'm doing it wrong because that's called wrist supination. I believe is the medical term, but that's where you start getting into pick slanting and downward slant, upward slant. Picking with the wrist is really the best way. You know, if you're into that style of picking, that's the best way to do it. You know, you've got like all the 80 shredders use the wrist a lot. And for some reason, I pick like that because that's the way I kind of taught myself how to pick. And it's, you know, in a lot of ways, the way you're doing it will probably get you to play faster a lot quicker in a shorter period of time.
I was going to say, you play very quick when you're doing your runs. And I noticed that. And then when I was watching you, it's when I noticed how you were actually picking and what you were doing. And I guess if I could offer some advice for people out there that are learning or want to kind of study other people's techniques, even the people that, you know, are in the music scene and famous, just watch how they use their hands, how they strum, where they're holding the pick. I know I have a tendency that my pinky finger and my ring finger end up usually kind of resting below the high E string a bit when I'm palm muting them. And I know other people, like Michael Wilton from Queensryche, when I watch him play, his hand is almost like in a fist, right? And he's not, right. His fingers aren't out. And there's just different techniques. It's, you know, whatever anybody's comfortable doing. So I would, you know, like I said, if you're learning and you kind of want to learn different techniques, always find out what's comfortable for you, but definitely take a look at different strings. Play with different strings, play with different picks, because you're going to get different sounds, right?
It's fun. It's fun to mess with it. Experiment, it is. Yeah.
And if you're doing recording, you know, it might – that different tonality that you're going to bring to the table using different things might just be what you're looking for. I know that the song that I put out, Estranged, on my Reverb site, I had always been looking for something to kind of finish it out and get it completed, and I just couldn't figure it out, and I ended up adding some piano to it, and I got lucky enough that, you know, I ran across what I was looking for. And, you know, if you're trying new things, trying new techniques and looking for different things to do, picks, strings, guitars, all that kind of stuff makes a huge difference. Amps, we've talked about that, tube, not tube. You know, if you can buy whatever you can to get some of the different unique sounds that you might want to get and experiment it and find what you like.
Yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong, folks. When I said that Ben was doing it the right way, I kind of say he's doing it the more typical way that is recommended by a lot of instructional institutions.
Hey, I got one thing
right. At least for pick slanting style with that.
I said, at least I got one thing right. And being self-taught, right?
Hey, you know what? You're in good company. So I try to take lessons from a guy a long time ago, 20 years ago. And it just, I knew I was better off teaching myself because the stuff I wanted to learn, he couldn't do. So, yeah, it's just, with picks and stuff, once you find something that really works for you, the only way you're really going to find that is if you experiment. So everything Ben was saying, just try a lot of different things. I mean, that's I found through that process, I guess organically, if you will, even my picking style, like Ben had pointed out, and also I found that I really like a pick that has a really good point on it, like a good tip, a real sharp point, as opposed to rounded off. Now, depending on how you pick the strings, it might slow you down. Like in Malmsteen's case, he even said he likes the picks that are rounded off a little bit so that it allows the pick to glide over the strings, because he does a lot of, he says he doesn't use sweep picking, but he does rake the strings. Let's just settle on that in succession. He'll do two string arpeggios, which are two downstrokes crossing strings. So some people call it a sweep. Some people call it a rake. I don't know what he considers it, but he says he doesn't use sweep picking, which, whatever, who cares? But you clearly see, because I started to do what Ben had suggested and watch the hands, particularly the pick hand. I always watched, I think a lot of players watch the fret hand, but watch the pick hand as well, because they always talk about the hands being in sync, right? So if you can at any point, if you got a stop, you got DVD, or you've got something electronic, like a digital download, allows you to go back, stop, rewind it, just tick back real slow, play it forward slow, and see how those hands are synced together, because they got to be speaking the same language and be in the same wavelength, because that's how your picking will improve. And so I think this is a great, really, you know, the picks and strings were a great discussion, because these are two very crucial areas that are going to make you a better player, but also be because of the fact that it's something that when you pick up a guitar, even if it's a different guitar, it'll, like, say you got an SG and you got a Strat, or you got a Les Paul, or you've got an extended range instrument, at least if you've got something, a preference established, it's going to get you to a good starting point and at least get halfway there as far as what feels like an old pair of shoes or something comfortable, a good starting point. And it's great. And, you know, the great thing is that neither picks or strings are very expensive. And a lot of places, like I went to a wedding and the groom, it was a family member of ours from my wife's side. And he was just kind of a singer, guitar, acoustic guy. You know, he wasn't really a guitarist in the instrumental solo guitar god sense or anything like that. But he just liked to sing and play guitar. So he had some somewhat floppy picks. They're like your standard Fender gauge, but they were giving them away. And they're like, here, you guys want some picks? You want some picks? They ordered too many. And I was like, I'll take anything you got left. I'll take them all. And I grabbed a bunch, and I still have them in this little box I was talking about earlier. And they're great. I mean, if you can ever get free guitar picks and you're a guitar player, that's like ace-ma. It's like awesome. The ace place, you know? So, and I'm not done experimenting with picks. There's a lot more on the market I'm not even familiar with yet, but I'm going to go. U.S. Blues, that was the company. I'm not endorsed by them. It's not a plug. I just happened to see them online in a catalog. So,
yeah, which that brings up a good point. None of the stuff that I play am I endorsed by. It's stuff that I have found through many years of playing that I personally like, and yeah, I promote it because I think it's quality. I think it's great stuff, and I think it's worth people at least taking a look at what some of these manufacturers and places have to offer. You know, I've had my Mesa Boogie for a long time. Doesn't mean that I don't like Marshall, because I like Marshall amps. I think that they have, you know, a great sound too, and I think some of their amps that they make are phenomenal. But for me personally, what I liked, you know, is kind of what I, you know, I'm not trying to say I push it on the people, because I don't. I just talk about it a lot, and I definitely bring it up in conversation because I think it's worth it. And I know you're the same way. I mean, we're not endorsed by anybody. We're just out here talking about the stuff that we've played on and enjoy.
Well, that's the beauty of it, right? Is if you're not stuck with a certain brand, you're free to go. And I have a very unique setup for how, like, with my tube amps and everything, I have a lot of different guitars to pick from, a lot of different amps, but a lot of different pedals as well. And the nice thing is that the Mahi pedal board is very unique. It's probably, I'm probably the only person that has a guitar pedal board setup. It's, I don't have a lot of pedals on it though, you know, but the thing is that I think one of the most unique combinations you could do is have an amp like a Mesa Boogie. And in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, what do I, you know, I'm not trying to say anyone's wrong or anything like that, but that seems to be an amp where you don't need like an overdrive pedal for it. And it's got an EQ setting to where you can, you can make it tight or you can make it as mushy as you want. That's the great thing about the tone stacks on the Mesas. And whether it's a Mark series, the Mark series has an EQ section, which is awesome. And so that gives you even more options. But the dual recs are great because you're able to, if you want it to be more of a mushy sound, just got to crank, dial it in. You want it to be nice and tight, dial it in. And you don't really need overdrive with those amps like that for most purposes. And great clean channels. They're just so, they're really nice. And I know we're talking about picks, but the reason I bring this up is because the marriage between amp and pick dynamics and also the attack of the strings, this is where it all comes together. And that's why Ben and I were like, you know, well, hey, let's talk about strings, you know, and I said, hey, let's put picks in there too, because that's the contact point, right? And then ultimately it's going to be dictated through your amplifier, through your speakers. So I think it's great. It's a great topic to bring up, and it's actually stoked my curiosity to try out some new picks.
Yeah, I think it'll be on another episode, but we'll also talk about one of the other many things and factors that go into it. We'll talk about pickups. That has a huge difference in what kind of tone you're going to get to. Not just the brand, but the style of it, if it's an active pickup, if it's not an active pickup. And then we'll get into things like fretboards and body material of what your guitar is made out of can definitely have an effect on the tonality of it too. So
yeah,
lots of stuff we'll be talking about, but yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that you had brought up the pick thing, because I hadn't really thought about it. And I think that's one of the things that, for at least for me, when people, you know, find out that I play music and I write my own stuff, they're like, oh, that's great. You know? And they're like, well, how long did it take you to learn? And is it something that's easy? And I sit down and I think about it, and I'm like, man, it's taken me years, and I still don't think that I've mastered even close to what I should be able to in the time that I've done it. And things that become second nature to a lot of players are looked at as like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, how do you do that kind of thing, right? To the new people that are learning. So I would say that definitely the knowledge that you pick up, or the more you can pick up, the better. And going back to relating to strings, definitely find pairs that you're comfortable with. I remember trying to pick up the acoustic that my father had, and the strings were just, they were a bear, right? And it turned me off to wanting to play, because it hurt my fingers right off the bat. And
yeah, that'll do it.
What fun is that, you know, when it's supposed to be fun and all you're doing is causing pain to yourself? You know, shame. You know, like you're getting punished, but
yeah.
Definitely, you know, hopefully some of this information that we're tossing out there will help some people, you know, go out, get creative, think about what they're doing.
Well, on acoustic strings, just real quick on that, was I like the Martin light, super light gauge.
Yes.
And they're the green box, and you'll see a guy wearing like a fancy suit, like he's at some kind of guitar expo, or he's doing a, what do you call those things? It's like, oh, recital. He's like a guitar recital or whatever. Like, he's real fancy and everything. And so he's got like a suit jacket on with his white sleeve. The green box are the ones that I play, and I really like them a lot. And they stay in tune really well. Even on a cheap acoustic, they stay in tune really well. They don't break. And they're so percussive and they're so crisp. And you can bend those a little bit. Just a little in standard tuning. A lot of guys will tune their guitars down so they can, you know, do some more bends. But I just love the sound of those strings. And I remember I played a gig once, and a guy came up to me afterwards. He's like, "Man, just what kind of guitar is that?" I was like, "Well, it's just your standard dreadnought. Well, it's got a cutaway, but it was an acoustic electric that just had a little simple 3-band EQ on there. And it was passive. It's a passive EQ that's built in." And the thing was that those strings that I had put on there were such a difference. And even people that were casual listeners are like, "Wow, those, it just pops out." And it, well, it's because of those strings, you know. And so I think strings are very important. And I just, generally when acoustic, you're going to want to have a pick that's pretty tough. And if you're a bass player that plays with a pick, I've seen a lot of guys using the Dunlops, the really thick ones, you know. So it's really important that you find something that's going to work for the whatever you're doing. So, yeah, it's great.
Did you end up liking the Elixirs? The condo, no. Of the guitar string?
No, because that coating they put on there, there's no resonance there. It was dull sounding because just the science behind strings vibrating is a steel string is that you want it to be, that we have the winding, but then, you know, even on the bare strings, it's like you don't want to have, the idea behind that was so that it keeps the strings lasting longer, but they sound so dull, they sound like they're already dead.
Yeah, because so it was
self-defeating.
Yeah, I had the same opinion. I get what they were trying to do with it, you know, keep your calluses and your, you know, the dirt and grime if you don't wash your hands and pick up a guitar. But all the dead skin and the calluses that rub off in between the strings when you're moving your hand up and down on the neck, you know, gets caught and gets, you know, that's usually what gets most of the strings dirty and grimy and to the point that it doesn't have any life. And I'm like, you're coating them already with something to make it so that it doesn't get coated.
Yeah, it's like the old lady that puts the plastic on her couch, and despite the plastic being on that couch, it's still outdated and looks nasty.
Yeah.
And even though underneath it's all protected, right? But it's like, what's the point? It's an ugly couch. You know.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of those strings. I did try them myself, and I agree with you. I did not end up liking them.
Those are the only Dean Markleys I've ever played. I think I may have. Oh, I take that back. Yngwie Malmsteen had a signature set that I played, and I liked them a lot. They were very nice, but then he quit them and then went to Fender. So I played the Yngwie. No, maybe did Fender. He did Fender. He played Fender Bullets. I didn't bring that up. I forgot to mention that. I used to play Fender Bullets all the time. And for Strats, they work out pretty good because that brass bullet at the end is literally a piece of brass that has a string coming through it. And they lock into the tremolo system. And they give you that sustain, supposedly. I didn't notice a big difference, but I did notice that tuning stability was a little better. But I will tell you, I broke a lot of those. They break something to do instead of having a ball end on there and they're going around that bullet. Instead, I broke a lot of those strings, so I quit using them. And then he went on to Dean Markley and everything, so I tried those out. And I was a Malmsteen fanatic when I was younger because he's just doing some crazy stuff on a classic Strat, you know, and there's no, you know, crazy tremolo systems or active pickups or any of that stuff. He's got the real deal, the original thing. And you know, he's got a scalloped fretboard and his own pickups, and he's got some, you know, high performance or high speed potentiometers on there, but other than that, it's just a regular synchronized trem with a brass nut and Shaler tuners, like the non-locking ones. I mean, so I just, I'm really happy with the Ernie Ball stuff now. So, and I love their cables too.
I know. We can get into the bridge and the tremolos a little bit later, but I just wanted to bring up that one of the other tricks that I found through the years of stringing guitars and stringing more guitars, instead of clipping both ends of the string to lock it in on a floating tremolo, what I'll do is I'll use the one end that still has that ball at the end of it, and I'll put it through the headstock so it actually catches on the peg, so I don't have to clip that end. And then I just end up clipping the one that goes up into the locking part of the tremolo itself. It saves me time, and it was easier. And it was a trick that I actually learned because when I went to go pick up my guitar, my first guitar from the Ted Brown shop that I had ordered it from, they were actually shipping Kirk Hammett's guitar up to Seattle through them. I don't know if it was getting fixed or something, but they were shipping it up. It was the Skull one. And he's like, hey, you should check this out since you're an ESP fan. And I was just like, oh, that's cool. And at the time I didn't know whose it was until after.
I guess the one that had the Caution Hot sticker on it.
It didn't have it on there yet, but yeah, it ended up getting it afterward. This was I think probably a year or two before he put it on. Yeah. But he was like, hey, come check this guitar out. And I was just like, oh, cool, that's an awesome looking guitar, right? Because it had the skulls and the inlays on the fretboard.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I was at the time, like I said, he didn't mention to me whose guitar it was until after I kind of looked at it, and you know, I didn't obviously wasn't allowed to touch it, but I looked at the headstock and I noticed exactly what they had done, which is what I'd mentioned. Instead of clipping both ends of the string, just use the string that is open at the end, pull it through, and then keep that nut at the, you know, that piece at the peg, so that you don't have to worry about trying to wind it and catch it.
Cool. But yeah, yeah, I like those JP guitars I've got. That won't work on that really. Obviously for obvious reasons, because it's a non-locking bridge. But the tuners at the headstock, they're Shaler locking tuners. Uh-huh. Those are great because it's kind of like that, but you run the string through. You don't even have to wind it. You just run it through, clamp down the tuner, and then get it up to pitch and just stretch it out until it's done. And I'm telling you, man, I love those bridges. They're just amazing, and I'm glad I don't have to use a Floyd anymore. I love Floyd Rose bridges because of the feel, right?
Yeah.
And we can
get into the different types of bridges. I think I don't know if we're on either on the next show or we'll talk about them soon.
They deserve their own segment.
There's, you know, it's a good topic to bring up, and there's a lot of information in there as well. But I just wanted to bring up that string technique just because of the
that's great.
The fact that I use it, it helped me out. It makes it easier for me when I switch strings because I have. The majority of my guitars actually have a Floyd Rose on it. I think I've got my black one is a solid. Yeah, it's got a tailstop. So, you know, I use Floyds just because I love them. But we'll, like I said, we'll talk about that. Speaking of which, I know it's getting to wrap up time. So I just wanted to say thanks once again to everybody that is listening. I appreciate, you know, you guys taking some time out of your day to listen to us talk about things that we like, that we're passionate about. Hoping that I don't know if we are going to get another gentleman in on the next episode or not, but I think we're going to end up talking about music from movies and soundtracks and bands and music that have kind of blessed some of them and made them better than the movie, or made the movie better than the soundtrack, I guess, if in some cases, right?
I don't know which Back to the Future I'm talking about.
Dude, ZZ Top rules, okay?
I've got the Back to the Future 3 ZZ Top song playing in my head when they flip the guitars around.
Oh, yeah, and they spun them in the video. Oh,
yeah, man, and they got the violins playing. I love that.
Awesome. Yep, it's good stuff.
So that's where the frisbee came from. Okay.
Yep. So I'm hoping that we can dive into that. I'm hoping this next episode, because I'm kind of excited about that one, since I'm kind of a movie fanatic too. But it'll be more music orientated than movie orientated. But maybe the gentleman Ponch, I'm going to drop his name, to see if he's busy, maybe.
I haven't asked him yet, so that'll be a nice surprise. Unless he listens, he'll probably hear this. But yeah, I'm doing another podcast tomorrow. My other podcast, we're rolling tape tomorrow, so to speak. So, yeah, I would just like to say, you guys, I'm really excited about this show that we're doing, this Podrack podcast, because literally, as like I'm sitting here and Ben's talking and we're conversing, I'm getting more ideas for more content for the show. I'm like, oh my gosh. We got so much we're going to dig into, and keeping these to an hour is great because we really get to zero in on aspects of music that I think will resonate with a lot of people. So the movie soundtracks is going to be great because it's going to give people a break from the gearhead stuff, but we're gearhead people, but we like it all. We like the most important, you like the results of what your setup is, your equipment is, and that's the tone. And it's going to be great to talk about soundtracks. So that's another big thing that Ben and I are huge. Him and I talk about occasionally is like our favorite composers. So I'm going to put my list together and maybe we'll do a top five or top 10 or something. I don't like those a whole lot because they always change, you know, but yeah, sure. That's cool. That's awesome. And we appreciate everyone that checks out this podcast and gives us a follow on Twitter. And every time we like Ben either brings up we're gonna record or start thinking about, I get really excited. Like I can hardly wait to hit the record button on this show. It's just great.
Yeah, I like also the fact that, you know, we had a chance to bring up new artists too and help promote the people out there that are still doing music and participating, because I don't know about you, but I get tired of the radio pushing the same stuff over and over again. And it's nice that people like you and I have an opportunity and a platform to, you know, not only share, hey, you know, rock isn't dead. There is still rock music in the world. It's not all R&B. Not that there's a problem with R&B or rap.
I've got a problem with that.
Yeah, and I know. but, you know, there is a lot of great music out there, and people that, you know, we can take our time to talk about, like we did with Derek Day, and, you know, bring some of that to light. I hope other people do check him out, but we'll still be bringing some of that content to light for people that might not necessarily know, or maybe you do, and it just refreshes your memory on some of these people that, you know, you hadn't either heard in a long time, or they're new, and they're worth checking out, because new music is great, and I will continue to keep pushing for that, including our own stuff. I know that, Justin, you've been working on new music. I've been working on it. It does take us a little bit longer. Justin's very busy with his other podcast as well. And, you know, I've got a day job too. So we are recording and writing stuff, together and separately. So we'll be sharing some of that stuff on here as well.
Yeah. My day job, I sell Velvet Elvis down in this downtown. No, I'm just kidding. No, I would like to clarify my earlier statement where I said I have a problem with R&B. I should say I have a problem with any style of music that pushes others out of the way. I think that this is just me, my scenario. I like having variety in music because then everyone gets exposed to different styles. But when you have one style that's being pushed out of the way by the powers that be, I have a problem with that as a fan. And that's another show, but I just want to say that I think that rock music and the stuff that we're going to be talking about later on down the road, I just think that everybody should be able to have a place at the table. So, and I think that Derek Day is one of those guys that's bringing this back to the forefront, and at least in a different, little bit different spin on things, and I think it's wonderful. So, tip of the hat to him.
Absolutely.
So, that's all I got. Yeah.
Worth listening to for sure. So, once again, thank you, everybody, and we will catch you on the next episode.